people will be aware that for Christians globally, the season of Lent has begun. At least it has for those on the Western calendar, and those on the Eastern calendar, it's about to. And during this time of what traditionally would be described as repentance, as we lead up to what, Alex, is kind of like the grand final for Christians, Easter, albeit strangely a celebration that moves through an act of capital punishment. Christians around the world have decided to take a pilgrimage, which is a journey where people are going internally traveling as well, and connecting the dots between the horror that is happening in Gaza at the moment and our own cities. So in Naam, found on maps as Melbourne, last week we walked the distance from Gaza City down to Rafah, walking from the outer suburbs down into the CBD, joined by hundreds of people, people from Muslim and Jewish backgrounds, as well as hundreds of Christians, seeking to map onto our cities this small geographical reality that is experiencing ethnic cleansing at the moment and ongoing genocide that's been highlighted in the international courts. And, of course, in Wadjuk Noongar lands, our walk actually starts this Saturday, and we'll be walking from Hillary's down to Fremantle.
I was just going to say, Jared, that, I mean, even if just the way you've described it at the end, walking from Hillary's to Fremantle, you know, really implicit in the idea of you've articulated it there is bringing home the concrete reality of what this actually looks like in terms of the level of carnage and mass murder is, frankly, the way I would describe it, and mapping it geographically. I believe you've used the term the geography of horror, I think was the way you put it. Because, I mean, part of that is that people in Perth don't appreciate just how small the Gaza Strip is, and really sort of relating it to what Perth suburbs look like does bring home that human dimension, doesn't it?
That's right, Alex. And if you're on the beach at Sorrento and looking south and seeing those what look like dinosaurs at Fremantle Port, that's literally the same distance that people in Gaza City are looking down to what they hope to be a safe place in Rafah. But as we know, the last couple of days, there is no shelter. And the Israeli military is now bombing the tent cities that have surrounded Rafah as it swelled by over three times its normal population, where people are literally hiding in graveyards because they think it will be safer to be in a place where no buildings can fall upon them as their tents are bombed. And that's the horror that people are experiencing currently.
Absolutely. And we've mentioned on the show before, and it's not hyperbolic at all to describe it in this way. This is actually a factual account of what's happening right now among hundreds of thousands of people in Gaza, particularly the hundreds of thousands trapped in Rafah, which is facing a horrific ground invasion that people are reportedly eating grass. I mean, that's worth repeating, literally eating grass and drinking contaminated water. So that is what's happening among men, women and children in particularly the southern enclave, the Rafah area of Gaza as we speak. Now, of course, part of what's implicit in this project as well, Jared, is that it's of course bringing ecumenically Christians together as well as Muslims and people of all faiths, and really that may surprise some people that yes, there are Christians in Palestine. And just on that point, rather infamously back in December, the Deputy Mayor of Jerusalem, Fleur Hassan Nahum, claimed in a radio interview that, quote, "there are no Christians in Gaza." And this was during an interview when she was asked to respond to the murder, because it was murder, of two Christian women at the Holy Family Church in Gaza who were going about their own business and were shot dead by an Israeli sniper at this Holy Family Church, Catholic Church in Gaza. So just speak to that, Jared. I mean, the fact that, yes, there are Christians in Palestine, and actually they're suffering among their Muslim brothers and sisters, in Gaza, just like everyone else.
Yeah, and part of the reason why the deputy mayor was so keen to keep the narrative, Alex, is one of the protracted religious conflict that has gone on for centuries. Because if you tell that story and you make Christian Palestinians invisible, it's easy to forget that actually this is a 75-year-old history of settler colonialism. And once you remove the story that this is somehow Muslims versus Jews, which is just absolutely ridiculous, and instead tell the story of Europe's rejection of the Jewish people after and during the Shoah, the Holocaust, and then the dividing up with the British Mandate, giving the land to one people over against those who have lived there, including 8% of the population in Palestine that were always Jewish. You forget that, like, there is actually a long history of the Abrahamic faith living peacefully together amongst each other, not merely under the Ottoman Empire, but dating back centuries and centuries. And so part of the importance of actually highlighting Palestinian Christians is that it is true, it's reality, and it breaks down this story that isn't true, that makes people feel like you're powerless and there's nothing to do about it. And part of the integrity that we long for as Christians is that we see Israeli human rights groups who are rightly naming this as an occupation, rightly naming this as apartheid policies, rightly naming this as genocide. We look at Jewish peace groups who have joined us in multiple locations, both in Melbourne, but our walk that has gone in Philadelphia. And maybe it's worth mentioning, Alex, that while it was only five of us, three of us here in Australia who started the Gaza ceasefire pilgrimages, it's now in 17 nations in 109 cities. And part of what we're seeking to do is follow the lead of Palestinian Christians in our cities, like Cami, who I was messaging with this morning. The two people that you mentioned at Holy Family Melkite Catholic Church, which is in the Eastern Rite, who were assassinated, and Pope Francis referred to this as an act of terrorism, which is incredibly strong language from a religious leader. They were Cami's cousins, and she lives here in Perth. And to actually connect that these are issues that people in Perth are feeling from their families, within the Christian community, within the Jewish community, of course, in terms of the hostages that have also been taken. And we are seeking to highlight in a really clear way that we have four clear calls. And the first one, Alex, is simply, we want an enduring and sustained ceasefire. The second one is an immediate flow of life-saving food and water and aid and fuel and humanitarian assistance. The third is the release of all hostages, both the Israeli hostages held by Hamas, and we have families in Perth have family members who were in that situation, and the over 7,000 Palestinian hostages held in Israeli prisons. And we have families in Perth who have family members who are also in that situation. And number four, an end to the occupation so a just peace can truly begin.
Yeah, Jared, just what you spoke towards the end there, it really does resonate a lot. I personally know a number of people. I won't name them, you know, on air because they may not wish to be named on air, who have lost family members in Gaza. And it actually belies this you know, line that we hear a lot in Australia that, well, that's a far-off conflict. It's thousands of miles away. It has nothing to do with us. Quite the contrary, it has very personal connections for a lot of people living here. And that brings me to my next question. Now, full disclosure, Jared and I are actually old friends, you know, going way back, and we've interviewed him on the show a number of times with different hats on, as I said in my intro. And we had a private conversation, a bit of a joke about how I'm, you know, a bit of a hard-headed Bolshie, and you could say Jared's you know, I mean, there's a good way, Jared, sort of the soft, mushy, you know, Christian activist and so on. You know, we've got differences, but we've got a lot of commonalities and a lot of, I'd like to think, respect for each other. But where I'm going with this question is there's a lot of heartache, there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of suffering. There's this sort of newfangled term, emotional labour. And I personally, you know, it's actually harrowing, to be quite honest, like following what's happening in Gaza on a daily basis. It's not necessarily good for one's mental health and one's emotional constitution, and this is, you know, I'm not a religious person myself, but it strikes me that this is an opportunity for emotional catharsis, for spiritual renewal and rejuvenation, and really bringing communities together, not necessarily in a rah 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 you know, kind of way, but actually in a very human kind of way, Jared. So speak to the importance of that dimension of the project.
Sure, Alex. And on a personal note, mate, I'm deeply moved, and you teach me a lot about what it is to follow Jesus, just in the way that you continually are present pursuing justice. I have much to learn from you, my friend. In terms of maybe one of the gifts that us God botherers of varying varieties, and we have varying varieties who are taking part in the Gaza ceasefire pilgrimages. Yes, this is an action initiated by a Jesus-y variety of God botherers, but we have Hindus for human rights. We have a Jewish voice for peace. We have Muslims for ceasefire, rabbis for ceasefire, all of which are joining us during our pilgrimages. And I think part of the gift of what spirituality can offer the larger movement is sometimes the only emotional range which is welcome is anger, and understandably so, and there needs to be spaces to express that. Zach De La Rocca reminds us that anger is a gift, right? But there is also the breadth and the spectrum of human emotions, and the importance and power of lament, what it is to enter into the grief. And part of pilgrimages generally is to, in a very embodied way, seek to transfigure, to transform the trauma that we're all watching. As the Irish politician, the Irish lawyer who was part of the South Africa's case against the Israeli government made clear, that this is the first time in history we've seen people recording and televising genocide that they're undergoing, in the hope that we might reach out and help. And the question is, what do we do with all that which we've witnessed? And whether we are rolling in a wheelchair or riding on a bike or putting one foot in front of the other, there is something that happens where we can metabolize the truth of the trauma our bodies are feeling and do something with it in such ways that there is an alchemy that happens, where what was not gold can actually be mined for gold. And the very things which often leave us depressed and apathetic and feeling helpless, as we join together and physically take this action, it's not like this is the thing to do, it is the next thing to do. And it's a next thing where we can hear from, as we will throughout the day on Saturday the 24th, we will hear from Palestinian Christian voices, what their families are experiencing. We'll bring that to silence and in prayer. We'll hear from people right across the spectrum of our community, and do something with that where we now have connections, and solidarity is no longer an abstract. But solidarity now means that you get to meet Cammy and hear her story. You get to hear Jason and his family's connection. You get to hear John and his story of his grandfather being the first Anglican bishop of Jerusalem, and realize that these are people on Wadjuk Noongar Buja, like ourselves, who, this is not an abstract. These are their loved ones undergoing this. And that's where there is a real power in solidarity, as we lift up those voices and learn to take our leads from them, instead of our good intentions in accidentally quashing their voices and not allowing truth to speak.
Very well said, Jared. And coming back down now from the lofty heights of emotional catharsis and spiritual renewal that you're talking about there, just coming back down to the practical, concrete side of things, I understand it is an all-day event. You know, it's a very long walk, but there is, I believe there's sort of one particular section of it. Is it 5 till 6 p.m. on the day from North Fremantle Station, where that's perhaps the more public component of the day, if I'm not mistaken? So just speak to people who perhaps don't have the capacity to march all day long, where they can sort of join that particular leg of the pilgrimage.
Sure, mate. And thanks for asking the question. People are welcome to join us from 7 a.m. At Hillary's. But of course, for a lot of people, that is a difficult ask. And from 5 p.m. From North Fremantle train station, many people will be joining us for that last leg. They'll be participating in the final leg, and we'll be welcomed by Reverend Mitch Garlett, a Noongar leader in our cities. who will welcome us there, and then we'll finally hear from voices. So if people would like to come down at 5 and join that last bit, or join us from 6 and then for fish and chips at Bathers Beach, people are more than welcome. But details can be found on Gaza Ceasefire Pilgrimage.com.